welcome to Radio Gorgeous, the fabulous Linda Nolan.
Oh, hello. I love Radio Gorgeous. That's the best channel ever.
Thank you. It was made for you.
Oh, that works. That's working. Keep on.
We're here because you wrote a book.
Who would have thought? Oh, my God. I know. And every time I see a copy of the book, I think, oh, my God, it's real. It is mine.
You did that.
I know.
I'm like, well, because I guess there was nothing left to do.
Well, I've done quite a lot, yeah.
Yeah.
And I was stuck at home for about 8 months, so I thought, let's write a book.
Let's write a book. It's called From the Heart.
Yeah.
And forgive me for saying this, but I didn't expect to be so moved.
Oh. Well, that's good in a way, because it moved me writing it, you know. And the thing is, it's called From the Heart. From my heart, rather. And I wanted it to be my rather than thee, because it is, I have opened my soul in this book. I wanted it, I said, if I'm going to do an autobiography, I want to be truthful about my whole life. I've had a great life, but I've had some rubbish moments as well as great moments. And I think that you owe it to the person reading the book to be honest and tell the truth.
And because it's been your life...
forever.
From the age of three,
yeah.
Has been quite open, yeah. You know, or in the public eye, rather.
Yeah.
That you have had breast cancer, and now you have secondary breast cancer, which your sister, Bernie, passed from. And as you say, it's treatable but not curable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And did that sort of spur you on to
it did,
share
actually.
Your story?
Yeah, it did. I mean, you know, when we were having the hit records and all, we were all asked, do a book, can we do... And like we used to say, well, I'm not old enough yet, I haven't had a life. And then, you know, wondering, will people be interested in my story? But then when I got this diagnosis and I was asked again, and I thought, well, maybe this is the right time. You know, I was supposed to be doing a big tour last year of with Madness, the musical. And, of course, I couldn't do that because I'd fractured my hip, which is how they found the secondary cancer. And so I thought, well, maybe this is the right time to do it then. Yeah. And it was hard, harder than I thought, you know.
Well, from the very beginning, literally almost from page one, you exposed the good, bad, and the ugly. You know, even if your life has been quite public, it's a different exposure. You weren't, you know, as public at age three.
No,
you know,
absolutely.
When you came out busting with Big Spender.
I do. I'm wondering now if you think it was too public.
Not at all.
Do you think, no?
Not at all. No, because I felt it was... The thing that I was surprised at being moved by was that, yes, you're exposing, but... What comes through is that there's a very earnest attempt to give an honest appraisal.
Yeah, yeah. And that's fabulous, because that's exactly what I wanted to do. I didn't want people to read it and go, why didn't she mention that their dad, because they meant her other sister mentioned that, and why didn't she mention, you know, we saw in the papers about her benefit, and why is she not explaining that? And so I thought, and they were difficult times to go back to, because I'd closed the door on those, you know. I dealt with it, put it in a drawer and closed the drawer. And so I had to open the drawer and get it out again, and, you know, and then rereading it, and I kept going over the terrible times. And, you know, at one point I kind of threw it all on the floor and went, I can't do this actually again. Somebody else has got an hour.
It was bad enough the first time.
Yeah, I've done it now. I've got to live through it again. But so it was difficult. But then it was when I did finish it, I thought, I'm actually quite a bit stronger than I actually thought I was. And that was a really nice feeling. I thought, yes, I've been in some messes I got myself into, you know, through ignorance. But I crawled my way out, and I've you know... As I was getting my feet firmly back on the ground last year, then this earth-shattering news happened. And but the book has come out of it, so good has come out of that as well. You know?
And it is a way, you know, to see the distance travelled.
Yeah.
You know, and enjoy the good bits. You know, yes, you have
absolutely,
to...
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, swamp
That's
through
life.
The bad
yeah,
bits.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, you get to...
You know, nobody's life is all roses. You know, there has to be those deep pits in people's lives. And and I think we've all done that, though. Bernie Ann, who had our eldest sister was diagnosed in 2000 with breast cancer. And we all have spoken about our illness in particular because I think because we have such an amazing support group. And, you know, and through our work, if we can just have one person at home who's sitting on her own, you know, whose mum and dad have gone and she was an only child. And if I can say, you know, it is rubbish having chemo. I know it's saving your life, but you can still feel rubbish about it. Then if she goes, oh, I'm so glad that's okay, because that's what I've been feeling, then that works for me, you know, and that's what I try and do sometimes.
And I think what I got through your book is that I think you have a unique perspective coming from as large a family as you do. Tell me a bit about like that childhood and as you remember it now, because what it evoked for me was the smell of your mother's makeup as she put it on at night. Oh yeah,
absolutely. And I do the same with my nieces now.
Yeah.
And she sits there, Sienna, who loves makeup. She's a 7-year-old that I'm really close to. And she sits there and I put my makeup on and I say to her, now, am I beautiful? And I have to say it the same way my mum used to say it to me. My Irish accent comes out. Now, am I beautiful? And she goes, yeah, Auntie Lynn, you're gorgeous. And I give her a little kiss, put lipstick on her cheek, you know. But, yeah, the smell of mum's makeup when she came in at night, knowing it was that comfort, oh, mum's home, we're okay.
I can smell pancake.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And it was...
But like every night you guys were out performing.
I know. Oh, you'd never get away with it now. You'd never get away with it now. But you know, I loved it. When we did our survivors book, the four of us, we did our chapters and they didn't let us read each other's chapters. And it was really weird seeing people's different perspectives on the same subject. And the thing that came out from mine was that you love this business. And I went, I do. And I'm not ashamed to say it. I adore it. And Brian did. Maybe that's what clicked with us. You know, we both had so much in common that we were passionate about. But yeah, it was, I loved it, you know. Yes, we were lying on chairs and going to school, getting in, because we'd no central heating at home, getting in and sleeping in our tights and then getting out of bed with little bubbles on your tights from the sheets and going to school and sometimes falling asleep at the back of a lesson, you know. I never thought I was being dragged or, you know, but it was, and when it came out that licensing laws came in and we had to finish at 9 o'clock, I was so disgruntled, you know. What do they mean? I can't sing. That's what I do, you know. But yeah, looking back, you think, no, you'd never get away with it now.
Do you think that was one of the reasons that you and Brian, it seemed so normal for you to be with each other 24 hours a day? I mean, I don't think you probably spent more than 2 minutes alone.
Absolutely not.
So, you know, as a kid either. Yeah. So no, for you, that
I always
kind
had
of
that
relationship.
Security, with somebody there, for me. I do think so. And it's funny how, you know, we have all actually got involved with men that drink after our dad was an alcoholic at one point in our lives. It's bizarre. But Brian and I were together 24/7, and the girls used to say, I would kill whoever the man at the moment was. I would kill Fred if he was here, you know, if I was with him 24/7. But it just worked for us, you know. We still made each other laugh right to the very end. We had, you know, we loved show business and we loved each other. And that's the way it worked for us, you know. We're very lucky, I know that. I know that, you know, although there were hard times as well with Brian, it was, he was the love of my life. And I, you know, a lot of people don't even get that in a lifetime.
And what I liked about your story, that it wasn't fairy tale. Yes, it's absolutely clear that you two were soulmates. It's absolutely clear that you were the love of each other's lives. And yet love doesn't solve everything.
No.
You know, it doesn't.
It really doesn't. And you know, and I felt, I've been having counselling since I've been re-diagnosed, and I had to speak to my counsellor about, I felt I'd betrayed Brian in a little way by saying about his drinking was worse than we thought, you know. I mean, initially when Brian died, we said it was the cancer that got him, but really it was the drink that got him in the end. And I said to her, I cried and said, I just feel I've betrayed him. And she said, you haven't. She said, you're only saying what people close to you knew. Mm-hmm. You know, and of course that is the case. And I, again, because of the book, I've got that out there, and I don't feel bad talking about it now.
And also, it struck me as that didn't bother you one iota, but he seemed a very old-fashioned man.
Oh, he was, yeah. He was. You know, he was 13 years older than me. And he was very... I was happy to be looked after. And I was happy that he would, you know, open the door and walk on the on the pavement on the side of the road.
Exactly.
And
so you didn't get splashed by mud.
Yes.
Which we all know.
I
had to train
that.
My husband,
yeah.
But yes.
Oh, I loved that. It was funny because he always used to open the car door for me until we got central locking, and then I went, oh, technology's ruined it, you know. But yeah, he still bought me flowers and left me notes, and and I let him do that, you know. To a fault, though, as I say in the book, because when he did die, I was absolutely lost.
Yeah.
You know.
So can I ask you, and I feel like I can ask you as someone who only learned how to drive 4 years ago. Did you never learn how to
no.
drive? I was going to say, because I was driving
I
your
know.
Hair and driving.
Oh, I know. Right. And my sisters keep going, it's never too late. And I think, I would be a rubbish driver now, I think, at this age.
Well, I did learn. I'm 50 now. I did learn 4 years ago.
Oh, wow.
So it can be just took me a year and a lot of money.
Yeah.
and two failed attempts.
Oh, and do you find
I love it
now. Do you now? More instead,
I'm not a good driver.
But Maureen said it would just give you, you know, for me, for working, for example, if I go back out on a tour of Blood Brothers, I have to get the train. And then I can't come home at the weekend because I have to go on to the next venue because of the train. Whereas if I drove, Maureen said, if you have a bad night, you just drive home and think I'll just drive back tomorrow, you know. I might do that. That might be one of my goals, actually.
I was absurdly proud of myself.
Yeah, and you should be. That's
amazing. And it did feel
and
like
in
a proper...
London.
Yes,
oh,
and on
Lord.
The wrong side of the road, wrong side of the car, you know, whatever. But I did... And I do love that I can do it now.
Yeah.
It did feel like a proper sense of achievement.
Yeah.
So.
I'm going to do
that.
That's
the only thing left for you to do, Linda.
It is. I think, actually, people have asked me, you know, during these interviews and all, what would you like to... That is going to be my goal. I'm going to learn to drive.
Yay! Fantastic. But that very... sort of old-fashionedness and fussing over you and over all of you girls. Mm. Did that seem, you know, for you it was comforting, but for your sisters...
It was too much for
it
them.
It was suffocating.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, yeah. And it was only... But it was in the capacity of being a tour manager. So mm-hmm. as far as he was concerned,
he was
the
doing
acts
his job.
Turn up and do their, you know, and... The girls have been like that. I was guilty of it as well initially. Of I can carry my own bag, and it's not the fact that he doesn't think you can carry your own bag. He just thinks that when you turn up and there's fans at the stage door, you should turn arrive and somebody else carries your bag. He's old fashioned in that respect as well, you know. But so I think the girls did find it suffocating, and I think that's what happened with the split. You know,
yeah.
when Brian and I left, you know.
And then it must have been utterly gutting, not only to. You know, be sort of torn apart, feeling like maybe, you know, you guys were blamed for it
yeah.
publicly. And then there was no money.
Oh, I know.
What
yeah.
in the hell?
I know. But, you know, I came to terms with that quite a long time ago. There was no money because we were badly managed. Our dad was our manager, and it was all right when we were living in Blackpool and we were the singing Nolan family that did the working men's clubs and stuff. But when we went to London, it got too big for him, and he was frightened to let go of the reins. And of course, you know, he was dealing with big record company executives. I mean, I never read a contract. I would go in and we would all arrive at the... Morris Oberstein, his name was at CBS Records, in the big function room. There'd be all the heads of departments there, and we'd all just go in and sign on this piece of paper. None of us read it. Signed our lives away. Didn't even know what we were getting. And
Woo-hoo!
You know, yeah. And then there was champagne, champagne, all of that. And you know, don't get me wrong, we signed our lives away because we were thrilled to have be offered a recording contract. But
absolutely. But
you know, in hindsight, which is no use to man or beast, is his dad should have let somebody come in. And help, you know, somebody who had experience of management, you know, and I think he was too frightened. And I think at the time, the girls thought somebody else coming in would ruin that. My Brian wouldn't have done it. He didn't have the experience as a management. But later on then, they then got rid of Dad and he was looking after their fan club. And I thought, that's broken his heart. Mm-hmm. We could have got somebody in that was a... Dad would always be the figurehead management, but the other guy was doing the deals. But Dad still signed the contracts, and Dad still looked after us. And that was what I thought should have happened.
Mm.
But it didn't, you know. And
because
so,
also that was your dad's ego, too.
Because, of course, yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
He'd really
been in control.
Wanted to
yeah.
be the.
Well, he wouldn't sign the contract just
business.
To go to London.
Yeah.
He flatly refused. And we begged our mother, and only because of her. you know, and doing the autobiography and looking back at mom, and I've mentioned this towards the end of the book, what a magnificent woman she was. And we never really, she never got the respect she deserved or the acknowledgement, because we thought, oh, I've got great news, I want to tell Dad. Because he's got time to sit down and listen, because he didn't do anything else, whereas mum would be washing or, you know, running the house, So it's brought, you know, it's brought good and bad memories back. But at the end of it all, I felt, that's good.
Yeah.
There's nothing that anybody can say to me that I can say, well, I didn't mention that book because I don't want to talk about it.
Exactly. You know. Exactly. And it's all there.
Yeah, absolutely. And and I'm thrilled. I can't tell you. Every time I see the book, I'm, oh my God, it's real, you know.
One of the things I wanted to talk about, because I thought you wrote particularly honestly about this, was your spiraling mental health and your depression and your really sort of very savage self-harm.
Yeah.
Which spoke of real, real loathing.
Yeah. Well, it was desolate. It was such an awful time when I first started self-harming. Mm-hmm. And I thought, why do people do that? You know, when I've seen it, why does that ever happen? And then I did it and I thought, ah, I get it. I'm thinking about this now, my hand rather than my heart, you know, and that sounds...
And I can feel something other than what I've been...
Than heartbreak, absolutely, the pain feeling, is there instead of there. And, you know, even to when I was trying to commit suicide, it was to just go sleep and wake up and it would all be okay. But, you know, I think my lowest point was when I lost hope. I looked out the window one day and Maureen was there with her future daughter-in-law, Madison, and I went downstairs and she said, are you okay? And I went, I cried. And she went, I know why you cry. She said, but why are you crying now? And I said, because I've just realised there's no hope, Maureen. And that was the lowest point. Because if you've got no hope, you've got nothing to look forward to. Mm. There was no light at the end of the tunnel. Because people would say, you know, it will get better. And I'd go, how can it get better when Brian isn't here? He's not coming back. So how can it ever be better? And that's what I really, really felt. And the local mental health team, through my GP, were amazing.
That I was completely blown away by, because Blackpool in itself is, you know, one of the places that's highest of people on benefits. You were on benefits yourself at the time, so it's not like you were, you know, paying for special treatment.
Yes,
they
the crisis
came out
team,
to
yeah.
you.
It's been there now for quite a few years, but I was at the stage where I would have been maybe sectioned. Mm-hmm. Because of my mental health and my suicidal ideals, is that what they say? I was thinking
thoughts
of suicide. Yeah. And so they brought in this crisis team where they come and they try and treat you in your home. And I remember she came with two big guys, and I opened the door and I let them in, and I thought, oh, actually, all of a sudden I thought,
are they coming
it just
to
doesn't
like
go
lift
the right
me
way?
Out?
Yeah, they're going to, I'm going to be going with these two. Yeah,
but they brought
were
in
amazing.
The muscle.
Yeah, they were amazing, and she just said, look, nobody can stop you committing suicide. That's why people still do it. She said, but I think we can help you, and you have nothing to lose.
That sort of gave you the power back.
I said, okay. Because I didn't want to die. I just wanted it to feel better. I wanted to be able to wake up in the morning and smile, and I wanted to say Brian's name without going into floods of tears, you know, and be able to think about our life together without being sad. And she was right. I had nothing to lose, because if it didn't work, I would do it anyway. You know, nobody can stop you. That's why people still do it. And I actually brought Maureen and Colleen to one of the sessions with me to try and help them understand. You know, Colleen is more of the, oh, you know, shove you out the door, you can do it. And Maureen was great, and Bernie, God bless her, in the fact that I'd say, I've been offered to do this, and they'd go, are you going to do it? And I'd go, I don't think I can. And they'd go, don't do it. And Colleen would go, you can do it. They knew I could do it, but they knew that if I said I couldn't do it, I wasn't right for me at the time, you know. But, she was amazing.
Sometimes you tried to run before you could walk.
And
you
did that by
going
back to
work. Push yourself
too soon.
And then disappoint people, and then that
brings you down again,
even further.
You disappoint yourself, you know.
Even further down,
And I think I did go back to work too soon. But the mental health team were unbelievable, and they put me on antidepressants and I had regular, you know, three times a day people calling, and I could phone them 24/7, you know. And, yeah, it was amazing.
And what gives you hope and strength now? What sustains you?
Well, you know, the irony is not lost on me in that halfway through the book, I'm trying to kill myself, and now I'm clinging on and hope I'll be alive forever. Because I've turned, I did turn that corner. I got hope back in the fact that there is a life. You know, Brian isn't coming back. Yes, you're right. That's never going to happen. Brian isn't coming back, but you have still got a life to live. And I look at my particularly my great nieces and nephews, who I would have missed them all, because the oldest one is 8. And I look at them now, and they give me hope, and they bring me joy every day. And in the acknowledgements in my book, I say, to my nieces and nephews, big and small, who showed me that life is worth living. And it's true. It is worth living. I'll never forget Brian, and I miss him every day. And there are some moments, maybe 2-3 times a day, or 2-3 times a week, or just a month, that I'll maybe have a little weep about him and think, but my life is great now, and now that it's been threatened and somebody's trying to take it away from me, I'm clinging on for dear life.
Going, that old I'm Nolan cavalry yeah. is back at the fore.
Yeah,
fighting man.
Yeah, I mean, because I remember I told them I'd written a suicide letter to them, you know, and I'd started off by going, I know you will all understand. And then at the bottom I put, P.S. please look after Hudson, who was our little dog who we adored. And when I got through everything and I showed them the letter and all, my brother went, well, two things. One, we would never understand. And the other is, we're not having the dog. So now you know not to do it. And Colin said, and if you hadn't succeeded, I would have killed you. You know, so it was like, OK, we won't go down there again, down that
right,
route.
Right, fine. Yeah. I've learned my lesson.
Yeah, yeah, I get it. Thanks. You love me, you know. But, you know, people say it's the most selfish thing in the world to do. But at the time, and I have been there, you are doing the most selfless thing by getting rid of this burden you are to people. And I've only understood that since. And I've met people who've said, you know, my wife committed suicide. A friend of ours, her daughter's boyfriend, committed suicide. And she said, I'm just so angry with him. And I said, but he was in a terrible place. He thought you would be better off without him. How could he think that? Because he was depressed and didn't, you know. So, yeah, I'm not... There is still a taboo about depression. And that's why I'm not... When I was diagnosed with depression, my husband, Brian, said to me, don't tell the office.
Mm.
I went, what do you mean? And he went, because you may lose work because of it. You know, Maureen goes to me, I really want to get you off your antidepressants. And I say, if I was a diabetic, you wouldn't be saying that, would you? Or if I had HIV, you'd be going to take your medication or whatever long-term illness. You know, it's just that still now, in 2018, there is that still, that taboo. Yeah. But I'm not frightened of it because it's controlled.
Well, know? And also you've been there and come back.
Yeah, but only through help and only through antidepressants
exactly.
and getting the right. And it didn't work straight away. And some of the tablets made me feel really ill. And I said, can't do that. But eventually they've got it to a balance where everything is okay. I still have crap days, but everybody has rubbish days, don't they? You know. You'll have to stop me rambling if I'm as I say in the book, I'm not even dressed for it.
Well, Linda Nolan, I have to say, through all the breakups, the makeups, thank you for being so present, honest, cheerful.
Oh, you've made my day. Honestly, that's really what I hoped it would be. And it's been great. I've enjoyed it.
Congratulations. And now get driving.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be back to you. I passed my test.
Yes, you best let us know.
I've got to do it first time, though, because you did exactly. How many times?
Third time lucky.
Oh, okay.
Doesn't matter. Okay. Just get there in the end, girl.
I'll be learning in Blackpool. It'll be a piece of cake compared to London. My God.
Well, thank you so much, Linda.
My pleasure. Really was. Thank you. Did I knock the fuzzball down?